This is Scott Becker with the Becker Private Equity Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Ashmeet Sadana. Ashmeet has founded a firm, a venture capital fund, a private equity fund. He'll tell us exactly what they do, engineering capital. Ashmeet, can you take a moment, introduce yourself, and tell us about engineering capital, and then we'll talk about how you got this started, what brought you to this point, and a little bit more. Ashmeet?
Scott, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me. Engineering Capital is a seed stage venture capital firm based here in Silicon Valley. And we specialize in investing in companies that take technical risk. Most VCs specialize in market risk, where they think about things like how big is the market, what is the price of acquiring a customer, what may be your customer acquisition cost or gross margins. We specialize in investing in software companies where there is technical risk, which I define as following. If it is not clear that the product could be built, even if you put a good set of engineers on it, then there's technical risk. And that's the kind of companies we invest in. Very early stage, I'm the first investor in all of my companies. And once we have proven the technical risk, once we demonstrate that the technology can actually be made to work, then we partner with traditional venture capital firms. And you know all the names on Sandhill Road, Sequoia Capital, Mayfield, Lightspeed, Greylock, et cetera.
And give us an example of someone has an idea, but they're not sure if they could technically get it to work. Talk about how you sort of evaluate that, how you assess that, how do you get involved, how do you bring engineering talent to bear. Talk a bit about what that looks like.
Yes, it always starts with an idea. In our case, invariably, that's an engineer, and that's why I call it engineering capital. But of course, anyone can have a good idea, and I'm open to anyone who would approach us with a technical insight. And then our job is to evaluate what is the risk of building this? Can it be done in software? Could it be done in a reasonably capital efficient way? Could you get to production, at least demonstration of the technical risk in $1 to $3 million? In other words, this has to be small. And if that is true, then we would make and lead the investment. I'm almost always the lead investor. And the idea would be to bring to bear all the resources of Silicon Valley. In other words, sharp technical people, great business insight, people who understand product in the way that has been built at companies like VMware and Google and Cisco and Arista, and bring those people together, sometimes as advisors and consultants, sometimes as employees, et cetera, to build that first product. An example of a company like this is VFunction. The founder and CEO, Moti Rafalin, smart guy from Technion in Israel, Harvard MBA, had worked at EMC, had done a company previously, wanted to solve the problem of how to take legacy programs and run them in the cloud. So the cloud is obviously the hot strategic thing in terms of IT. Everybody wants to run in the cloud. It turns out that that's almost entirely being used for new programs. What about all the legacy programs? What happens to the millions and billions of dollars, literally trillions of dollars of investment that has gone in enterprises? And Moti has built now an application which lets you take a program in your legacy infrastructure and automatically convert it into microservices, into a cloud-native architecture, and get all the benefits of the cloud. Something which would have taken months or even years for people to do manually, we can do in hours. And that's an example of an engineering capital company.
And you talk about, I'll ask you a question, Technion or Harvard Business School, which is a better institution? Where do you bank more on this gentleman because he's from Technion or from Harvard Business School?
You got to have both, Scott, and I'm not ducking your question. In my opinion, you know, a great leader, especially for us in deep tech, they have to have deep technical insights. They have to be engineers, nerds, and geeks, and understand technology in a way that the average person doesn't. Otherwise, it wouldn't be deep tech if everyone understood it. On the other side, we are investors. I want to make money. In other words, you have to build a business. And so to build a business, of course, an MBA, being an executive in a company, sales experience, all those skills are important. And so I hate to say it, but you have to have both.
No, it's a fair statement. You've got to be technically bright plus a commercial mind as well. How did you get started in what you do? How did you start to be a seed investor? I mean, pre-Series A, how did you start to be a seed investor? How did you get going in this?
Yeah, I'm an accidental venture capitalist. So I was working at VMware, which you may know now, of course, is a very large company. I had joined when VMware was a startup, and I used to run ESX Server. ESX Server became the killer product for VMware. It is still the heart of the business, and the vast majority of the revenue came from that. But the company had been sold, and so I decided to think of doing another company, and I said, maybe I'll go start a company. I started talking to some people and ran into folks like Catherine Gould, Mike Hsu, Bill Elmore, Jim Anderson. These are the founders of Foundation Capital, the senior partners there. And they said, hey, you seem like a sharp kid. Would you be interested in trying your hand at venture capital? And I had never thought about it. So I owe my life as a VC to them. They gave me this wonderful opportunity, trained me as a VC, and I started Engineering Capital 6 years ago as my own firm after having worked with them for several years. And at Engineering Capital, I'm now on my third fund, $140 million under management, and entirely because of an accident of history when these very good folks taught me how to be an investor.
What an amazing thing. And where do you look for opportunities? Are you looking in that Silicon Valley ecosystem? Do you look all over the world? How do you source opportunities? I mean, there seems to be an endless amount of opportunities coming out of that world compared to many other worlds where there's not an endless amount of opportunities. But where do you source and look for deals and opportunities?
Yeah, so I'm based in the Bay Area in Silicon Valley, and the vast majority of opportunities come over here. For me, just because, I'm a local investor and there's no shortage of opportunity here. But I am open to looking at companies outside. I'm currently looking at a company out of Canada, University of Toronto. They're doing some excellent work in the AI space over there. I recently did a company called Robust Intelligence, came out of Harvard, your own Singer, and then Sequoia Capital at the Series A, and they're off to a good start. So came out of Boston. They actually ended up physically moving the company over here after my investment. But that's atypical. I think you can build a great company anywhere. There's no real reason to have a particular geographic preference. But obviously, there's huge incumbency in Silicon Valley. Personally, I spend a lot of time in universities, Berkeley, Stanford, I mentioned Toronto, UPenn. These are all places where I think there's good research going on. And then industry. All the good companies which are literally within 20 miles of where I'm sitting right now, the Cisco's, Facebook's, great, Google's, Microsoft, Amazon, etc., are great places where people get started. What I am not doing and where I am not sourcing, which you often hear about in popular press, is the 19-year-old kid who wants to drop out of Stanford and start a new company. That is a viable model. And obviously, that's how Mark Zuckerberg started Facebook, et cetera. But usually, if you're doing true technology innovation, you need domain experience. You need education. You need domain experience. So most of my work comes with people who tend to be on the more experienced side of the spectrum.
When you look at seed investing, people famously talk about seed or venture capital investing as 4 out of 10, 6 out of 10. Won't end up going further. It's particularly on the seed side that, out of 10 seed investments, only a certain percentage will get to Series A in the next level of funding, and so forth and so on. How do you look at those figures? Are those accurate figures? Are they very, very macro figures and very different for a different type of firm? How do you sort of look at those types of figures when people talk about VC or even earlier stage seed investing as to what really ends up turning into a real company or not?
So I'm definitely at the very early stage and therefore at the highest risk stage of investing. And because I'm taking this technical risk, you could argue that my risks are even higher. It's only been 6 years since I started, so I couldn't say that this is proven yet, But so far, it looks like it's going to work out to be roughly that same ratio, maybe 4 out of 10, 6 out of 10 is what you said. I know there's a big variation right there. But I can share with you that my fund one, which is a 2015 fund, had 16 companies in it. I've only lost two of them so far. And obviously, the others have survived. You can't say that they've thrived. So I don't know whether they'll all go on to be successful. In other words, all the remaining 14. But so far, the ratio is looking pretty good. But let's also recognize, you know, we've had a wonderful macro market the last few years. Obviously, the COVID pandemic was, you know, very tough in some ways. But the macro market has continued in a good way. And so perhaps the loss ratio is artificially low right now, and we will suffer more once the market turns. But at this point, I would say bottom line, I have no reason to believe that the work I'm doing is more or less risky than a traditional seed investor.
And what about the issue of, do you make sure you've got money to invest behind the companies that you seed? So for example, some seed investors, you know, will very much in a disciplined way make sure they're done at Series A or Series B, and they moved it on to Sequoia and Andreessen Horowitz, whoever it might be. Others are going to follow through another level or two. Is there a spot? Do you have a thought process on how far you follow a company?
Yeah, this is a really important question. It goes to the heart of fund construction and reserve policies and follow-on policies. At the end of the day, I'm running a venture fund, and I'm incented to return the highest multiple that I can on the entire fund. And it is a fact that almost all venture funds end up making the vast majority of the multiple on a single company, which becomes the runaway success. Maybe there'll be two that will be the runaway success. So that's what pulls you to keep reserves and to double down on that winner. And so I do have some bias for keeping reserves and keeping it over there. But it's also equally true that it's hard to choose between your children at an early stage. So you don't know which of the companies is going to be that crazy success. And so it's kind of you're dancing between the devil on both sides. And like every other good investor, you know, every day I wake up, I try to make the best decision I can, and then I have to live with that decision. There is no formula. There is no silver bullet answer to this question. It is a case-by-case evaluation that I make for every single company.
Magnificent. Well, it's really, really helpful to hear your thoughts on this. What an amazing success. You're in your third fund now. Congratulations. What a great, great run. And what a pleasure to visit with you, Ashmeet. Thank you so much for taking the time to visit with us today. What a pleasure. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Scott. It's been a pleasure.